You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled At Home in the Universe, given in The Hague in 1923. This is Lecture 2, entitled Interweaving Our Destinies, given on November 14th, 1923. My dear friends, yesterday we tried to find the relationship between the human being and the cosmos. Through such studies, we want to establish a basis for a deep, complete understanding of our suprasensory being. Today, I would take what we said yesterday a little further, in a more, in quotes, outer suprasensory way. We will consider suprasensory human nature after a person has dispensed with the physical and etheric bodies, that is, while traveling the path between death and a new birth, after having passed through the gate of death. Today I will be more descriptive of what an externally imaginative approach perceives of this journey between dying and entering a new birth. This will provide a basis for understanding the human soul and spirit. Nevertheless, we must be clear right from the beginning that it is really nonsense to speak of the physical human being apart from the human soul and spirit. Because our physical aspect, the physical body as perceived in the world of the senses, is in fact thoroughly permeated and suffused by soul and spirit. Spiritual forces form our brow, our features and countenance, and all that is the human form. We should not be surprised, therefore, that those who possess a faculty for spiritual sight continue to speak of the form of the human being even after death. The truth is that imaginative cognition indeed sees that a person who has passed through death reveals a form. Compared to something physical, of course, it appears as no more than a kind of shadowy image. Nevertheless, it is clear and very impressive. Initially, this form gives the impression of something external, because we have to imagine the human soul and spirit as moral and spiritual. But we find that we cannot develop a lasting and valid spiritual view of the suprasensory human being unless we first speak of these imaginations or image forms that we continue to wear even after we have passed through the gate of death. At death we lay the physical body aside. We need not linger on what happens to it, since the particular way dissolution takes place is far less important than people believe. The dissolution of the physical body, whether it is cremated or simply decomposes, concerns only our fellow human beings. It is not really important for our own life after death. So we must speak of the physical body as it presents itself to sensory perception, as something that dissolves into outer nature and its forces. Next, the etheric body also dissolves fairly soon after death. You know this from my presentation in Title and Outline of Esoteric Science. Once these two outer manifestations of the human being have been laid aside, something frees itself of them, which have acted as enveloping sheaths, though the word sheath is not quite accurate. Those endowed with the appropriate imaginative cognition perceive the nature of what is released after death from these two sheaths. It is a form that initially resembles the human physical form in a certain sense, but this spirit form, as I will call it, is constantly changing. I have described the life between death and a new birth often, and from widely varied perspectives, because this is the only way to develop an adequate concept of it. Today I plan to speak of it from yet another specific perspective. We must add this to what has been presented at various other times to get a complete picture. This human spirit form changes constantly. Indeed, it will always continue to transform, so that we can really characterize it appropriately only when we say that it completely becomes a physiognomy or countenance. To the imaginative vision of an initiate, or one who has passed through the gate of death, a physiognomy, as it were, appears. This countenance is the whole human being, not merely a part. The whole human being appears, according to the physiognomy in spirit form, so that this physiognomy expresses the inner moral and spiritual nature of the human being. After death, a bad person will look different from a good person. One who has made strenuous efforts during earthly life will not appear the same as one whose life was thoughtless or superficial. But all this expresses itself in a way that is more than countenance. Indeed, one's countenance loses much of the characteristic impressed upon it during physical life. What it retains tends to become less and less defined, and other aspects of the body, by contrast, become very expressive, especially inside where the lungs are. The physiognomic form of the location of the lungs during physical life reveals the permanent qualities of one's character. The entire chest region assumes a definite physiognomic appearance within the spirit form after death, and it reveals whether a person was courageous or timid, whether one approached life with boldness and bravery, or invariably shrank from the blows of life, and so on. The arms and hands have a specific capacity for expression after death. The biography of a person can be read from them between birth and death. This may be seen most clearly by a thoughtful observer in the hands, which even in physical life are full of meaning and very revealing in their countenance. In physical life, we are very expressive in the way we move our fingers, the way we hold out our hands to others when we meet them, whether we shake hands with the fingertips or press warmly with the whole hand. We can also learn a great deal from how people move and shape their hands in everyday life and work. Such things usually go unnoticed, but people become much more interesting when we observe how they hold and move their hands and fingers, because they reveal themselves this way. After death, this is even more so. An individual's life history can be read in the arms and hands. This is also true of other organs. Everything expresses itself physiognomically. After death, human beings wear their moral and spiritual physiognomy. Yesterday we talked of how people are shaped by the cosmos and appear before us formed, and about how this form, embedded in the skin and the sensory organs, expresses what the cosmos has inscribed into the cosmic ether. But this form, bound by the skin and familiar to us in earthly life as a person's form, becomes the physical expression of our moral and spiritual physiognomy, and it continues this way for quite some time. As human beings enter this way into the new life, they meet the others with whom they had in earthly life a community of spirit, mind, and heart. At this point, pretense is no longer an option for them. The true nature of each person and their feeling toward others is faithfully represented in the physiognomy just described. During this period of life after death, we live with those we were connected with through destiny in the previous earthly life or in some other earthly life. Parenthesis, this follows the, quote, period of trial, close quote, which I do not intend to consider today. Close parenthesis, footnote. See the afterword, pages 116, foreword, and Rudolf Steiner, titled Theosophy, end of footnote. They come to know one another thoroughly. At this initial stage, however, we come to know one another completely by witnessing the physiognomic forms I have described. And what we experience during this period is precisely this intimacy with those to whom we are related by destiny. You must try to imagine how close and intimate this mutual scrutiny really is. Perhaps the words sound somewhat ordinary, but they express the reality. Each human being stands fully revealed to the other, along with the whole meaning of their common destiny. This is how we encounter one another and live together. Also, during this period of existence, those who have become a physiognomy come to know the beings of the third hierarchy, angels, archangels, and archai. These beings are always physiognomy. It is their permanent nature. They issued from the cosmic beings of the higher hierarchies, manifesting their whole soul and spiritual nature as spirit forms, thus making it perceptible to imagination. So, in addition to keeping company with those who are connected with us by destiny, we experience the beings of the third hierarchy during this time. Of course, the display of all those with whom we are connected by destiny is full of variety. Among them, for example, are some who would have preferred that we were on the opposite sides of the world. Nevertheless, they are connected to us by destiny. We know exactly what they thought of and what they actually did to us. There is great variety in these encounters. And like radiant sun figures, beings of the third hierarchy are present as we move among these wandering forms. Of course, the words I use only suggest the reality of this, but there is no alternative to earthly language. But when we say that, during this period after death, we meet those with whom we are bound by destiny, this is the reality. Strangely enough, we are able to understand only those with whom we are connected by destiny. To a certain extent, those with whom we are not connected by destiny are invisible to us. We have no way of reading their moral and spiritual physiognomy. We do not notice them, nor are we able to, because only connections of destiny give us the power to see. We would see very little here on earth if it were our fate to see with physical eyes as we do after death, because here people love to observe in a passive way, merely allowing objects to shine into their eyes. In our current era of civilization, people are not very inclined to arouse themselves to wakefulness in regard to their surroundings. Many of those who are especially fond of movies and look only for impressions to which they can passively surrender, would, if they had the kind of vision we have after death, not be able to see other human beings at all on earth. This is because after death, our ability to see other human souls depends entirely on attentiveness, which is implanted in us at that point by our connection with others through destiny. During the first period of life after death, we learn about one another and about how human souls are received into the spiritual world by beings of the third hierarchy. We witness the joy of the angels, archangels, and archai for human beings who come into the spiritual world in the form I have described. Or we perceive how little joy they experience in relation to them. We observe the effects human souls have on the beings of the hierarchies that are closest to them in the invisible world. Then another period begins. Human beings who have been coming to know one another and have been continually gazing at one another now begin to understand one another in a way that is a part of our life after death. They begin to understand in a spiritual way the moral spiritual physiognomies. In the first period after death, we really live in nothing but memories. We live with those to whom we are connected, though we live very much in the present. We live, move, and act amid all that takes place among human beings and the beings of the third hierarchy, but in a kind of remembrance of earthly life. Then a period starts, when we begin to gain spiritual understanding and comprehend, as comprehension must occur in the spiritual world, the meaning that human moral and spiritual physiognomies have for one another. We come to understand our fellow human beings. And thus we can say that a certain physiognomy indicates events of destiny that one has shared with a certain individual, and so on. We experience this during the first period, right after death, by viewing our associations according to destiny. Now, however, in the second period, our experience tells us that having lived our life together as revealed by the mutual understanding of our physiognomies, our future together must now follow a particular course. We begin to comprehend a possible future course of progress for our common destiny. And we begin to get a sense of how our relationships, begun during earthly life, can be developed. We see in perspective how the threads of destiny form in the future, threads of common destiny revealed in the moral and spiritual physiognomies. This experience becomes increasingly intimate, indeed so intimate that the souls grow together. As the soul proceeds during this phase of existence, the most expressive part of our being on earth, the head, gradually disappears. It dissolves into a kind of spiritual mist. To the same extent that the head disappears, the features of the moral spiritual physiognomy also change. The features alter, and something appears that points from the past into the future. At this point, one is placed into the spirit of the planetary movements. That is, the spirit of the forces of the planetary system. As a result, those who belong together approach the spiritual sun existence at a specific time after death. The planetary forces bring them into the spiritual sun existence. All the experiences they have shared, along with the seeds for future experience, are carried with them into the spiritual sun. From the perspective of real knowledge, it is childish to conceive of the sun as a ball of gas out there in the universe. This is only the view the sun reveals to Earth. When we look at it with the eyes of the spirit or soul, which we have after death, and view it from out in the great universe, the sun is revealed as a spiritual being, or rather as an assembly of spiritual beings. And mixed among those spiritual beings are human souls, who bring to the sun's spiritual existence not only their own individual spiritual essence, but also their common destinies. This whole, in quotes, system of human souls shines out into the cosmos, along with judgments the beings of the second and third hierarchies have passed on them. The only way we can correctly conceive of the sun from any earthly viewpoint is this. As we observe the sun from the earth's surface, it does indeed appear like a shining, radiant ball. We could make a drawing of it. We usually think that if we could ascend in a balloon and inspect the sun from high above the earth, it would appear exactly the same as it does when seen from earth. But this is not the case. If we wanted to make a picture, a sensorially perceptible image of how the sun looks to spiritual vision, we would have to show spirit radiating from the sun into the vast expanses of the cosmos. From Earth, we see only the aspect of the sun that shines toward Earth. Now, however, something appears to spiritual vision that gradually becomes a spiritually audible perception. It becomes an element in the music of the cosmos, and it is something quite magnificent. But this element has been experienced by humankind in the past, and it is experienced also after death. This is all carried into the sun existence, and it then radiates into the cosmos. When this happens, the human beings there have already assumed the form of the sun to a certain extent in their spirit form. These words sound contradictory, but we must describe the facts as they correspond to reality. After passing through the gate of death, all that was human physiognomy, or spirit form, becomes round. And when human beings arrive in the sun, in the spiritual sense, they have, in fact, become a sphere of spirit. Each human being has become a spiritual sphere. And the cosmos is reflected in this spirit sphere. To the degree that our whole being has become a sensory organ of spirit, the impressions we receive are no longer earthly. One completely becomes a, quote, spiritual eye, close quote, EYE. And this spiritual eye receives an impression of the entire cosmos. We feel united with the whole wide universe. Our earthly being is now experienced as external to us. But as we reflect the whole universe in ourselves, as in the spiritual eye, we feel united with the destinies we have experienced both individually and with others. After living for a while in this period of existence, we move gradually into the sphere of the first hierarchy, that of the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. We unite with the first hierarchy. First, we united with the third hierarchy, where we moved among human beings bound to us by destiny, moving in our moral and spiritual physiognomy. Then we were carried by the planetary forces into the spiritual sun existence, where we united with the second hierarchy, but then we were still outside the first. Now, once our own sun existence has made us feel at one with the whole cosmos, we unite with the first hierarchy of seraphim, cherubim, and thrones. And at this point, we begin to be able to become interested in more than only those with whom we are connected by past destiny. Other souls appear now for the first time in our life between death and rebirth. And they enter our sphere of destiny. We now begin to see human beings other than those previously tied to us by destiny, souls with whom we will be connected by destiny in future incarnations. Under the influence of the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, however, we begin to notice that the forms of those with whom we were already connected by destiny are changing in powerful ways that correspond to the extent of our connections. First, I will describe this more externally. When we physically observe someone walking, we see first one foot move to the front and the other, and thus that person moves forward. As we watch, we see what we might call a series of momentary snapshots. But to those who use imagination to observe a person in the existence after death, the legs appear to assume a form with every step that contains that individual's destiny, the destiny that is currently being experienced and was molded during earthly life. And the destiny is carried not only in the legs, but the arms also bear the significance of our destiny, the effects, both good and bad, of what we did with our hands to others. The way we move displays an impulse toward justice, how it is brought into the world and included as a part of our destiny. Similarly, in the bloodstream, we can see the inner destiny we create through our moods and inner responses to life. These revelations of destiny can be seen for quite some time after one has entered this realm of existence. One can still observe them in the form of the limbs, and except for the head and chest, in other human forms. On earth, the sight of someone walking by with no head or chest would be very unpleasant, but in the sphere between death and a new birth, it is very different. There, everything is changed into morality and spirit. What we see there is much more powerful than seeing any human head on earth. Those who are connected by destiny have such experiences during their spiritual sun existence, which in my mystery plays I call cosmic midnight. Depending on how much they are really connected, human beings work together to transform the nature of what they were in the previous earthly life. With spiritual sight, we can witness what happens here in detail. We see, for example, how the leg is changed into the form of the lower jaw in the next earthly life, and how the arms and hands are transformed into the upper jaw and the nerves in that area. You must understand, of course, that this is all seen through spiritual perception, which can watch the whole lower human being change into the upper part. A human being does not effect this change alone, but through all who belong together, to the degree that they are connected by destiny. They work on one another. This mutual work leads to spiritual relationships that cause human beings to find one another and come together in earthly life. Such spiritual relationships, brought about in the life between death and rebirth, unite us with some degree of intimacy. It is indeed true that the spiritual form of the head, as it will appear in the next incarnation, is built by the mutual activities of those who are united by destiny. This work is done in the spirit land, and its meaning and significance are certainly not less than our work on earth. On the contrary, they are more so. So you see, just as we can use images taken from earthly life to picture what happens to us between birth and death, similarly, we can describe in concrete detail all that happens to us between death and a new birth. We can picture it all very concretely. The transformation in the limbs and metabolic and blood system is marvelous and awe-inspiring. Midway between death and a new birth, however, it is our human moral and spiritual qualities that are transformed. And what emerges from those transformations is the sound of cosmic music. This human form is fashioned after the sun and reflects the whole universe. It reveals the outer form of the human being as cosmic tone. One does not, comparatively speaking, see a visual representation of the human being. Instead, one is presented with a representation of the transformed lower human being as cosmic sound. And as this continues to progress ever further, one becomes a part of the cosmic word itself. The initial blend of melodies and harmonies now becomes articulated aspects of the cosmic word. Our nature becomes such that we, in quotes, speak our own being as if from the cosmos. Consequently, there is a period between death and a new birth when our being becomes, in fact, in quotes, spirit word. This is not merely a word of a few syllables, but one of infinite expression. It speaks not only the whole of humankind in general, but also the whole of that particular individuality. During this period between death and a new birth, one mysteriously knows and sends a revelation into the cosmos, revealing the nature of the human being that is perceptible to divine spiritual beings. When the human individuals work on one another to transform the lower parts of their form into the uppermost parts have gradually dissolved. And when the foundation for their future association has been established according to their past relationships, it is as though a spiritually sculpted element of feeling were being shaped. One takes up this spiritually sculpted element and works it, transforming it into a musical sound, and finally into speech. During the first stage after death, we move among the spiritual physiognomies of those we are connected with by destiny. We witness those physiognomies. We become aware of one another and come to know one another in a spiritual form, according to moral and spiritual qualities. During this first stage, however, it is only a kind of seeing. It is no more than seeing, though the human souls bring it together in an intimate way. Then a period begins that I described as a mutual understanding, in which we gaze with understanding deeply into the inner nature of one another, recognizing how the future will connect with the past as destiny develops. Next, a process of transformation unfolds from this, in which one works on another through deep knowledge, and where the spiritual sculpting is transformed into musical sound followed by speech. Now we go to something more than understanding. We speak our own warm, quote, creation word, close quote, to one another. On earth we utilize a speech organ to talk to one another about what we know. The physical body provides the basis for what we say, and living within it as a fleeting element to which a higher element has been added are the ordinary words we use. We use our vocal organs to express ourselves to one another, and this shuts off and eliminates what lives behind our merely physical aspect. Imagine how it would be if what we say, what flows into fleeting words, were not only the expression of our very being, but were at the same time our being. This gives you a picture of how human beings distinguish between and reveal themselves to one another midway between death and a new birth. Word encounters word. Articulated word meets articulated word. Inwardly enlivened word meets inwardly enlivened word. But the human beings themselves are the words. And chiming together, they harmoniously sound the spoken word being. Impermeability does not exist there. They indeed live together. And the word that each one really is comes to life in the word that is the being of the other. And links of destiny are formed there that continue to work into the next incarnation. And these express themselves as sympathy or antipathy when these human beings meet again. These feelings of sympathy or antipathy reflect what we said to one another in the spirit land midway between death and a new birth. There we talked with one another, and we ourselves were being spoken. On earth we feel a vague reflection of this when we meet one another again. This is approximately the way we would have to describe the sense of our experience on earth with others, as reverberations of what we each were in the creative word, speaking our being in the life between death and a new birth. That is when we exist for one another in the truest sense. When we live for one another on earth, it is a projection of spirit onto earth of that true togetherness. After we have lived through that period of time, we enter another. We begin to separate gradually from the beings of the first hierarchy, the seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, and we return again to the realm of the second hierarchy and the forces that planets exert on one another. This is where perceptions of the universe arise, perceptions that had been less direct before, because we were able to follow them only in other beings. The cosmos now begins to arise before us as an outer universe. We learn also of our mutual relationships with beings whose destinies are not connected to us. We learn of our connections with those human beings who first appeared during the middle period between death and rebirth. This occurs when we re-enter the planetary spheres and connect with the beings of the second hierarchy. We have been with them before, but now the connection is different because the first hierarchy have gradually faded from sight and are eventually no longer present. Spirit seeds are found there for the pliable form of the human being, for the new human chest and limbs. The human being gradually forms and rebuilds a preparatory human form. What we spoke of as our own being in cosmic word becomes cosmic again, and the pictorial sculpture of our being grows from the music of the spheres. Now we approach the moment when we are ready to connect with the embryonic seed provided by a mother and father. We simply join with it. There is a spiritual form that descends from the spiritual world into physical existence. And this is the actual human being. Whereas the embryo offered to us exists only so that we can connect and permeate ourselves with earthly matter. Our life between death and a new birth is rich in meaning. The work we do there is the interaction between ourselves and beings of the higher realms. The whole outer nature of our life between death and a new birth is completely different from the nature and essence of life here on earth. Let us take our study further and increase our understanding of our suprasensory human nature. To do this, we must become clear about a few things. First, we live in the physical world of Earth. Here we perceive the outer world through our senses. We must say that we perceive things that are sensorially perceptible and physical. In earthly life, we perceive only what is physically perceptible. Beyond this world, there is a second to which our ether body belongs. It imbues and permeates the physical body. This world is initially imperceptible to our physical faculties of perception. It is not physical, but supra-physical. Bordering our perceptible physical world, therefore, is one that is imperceptible and supra-physical. This is the next world beyond our own. And within it live the third hierarchy beings, angels, archangels, and archai. This other world is imperceptible to those who live in a physical, earthly incarnation and have not developed spiritual sight. It is not physical, but its activity does manifest in the physical world. There is also a third adjoining world. This world is also not physical, and in this respect it is similar to the etheric world. It is also supraphysical, but, oddly enough, it is perceptible. It can be perceived from our world. Now we have come to the characteristic of a world that reaches into our world and is perceptible, but it is also supraphysical. Consequently, we cannot explain its true nature. What we receive in sunlight, for example, belongs to this world that is supraphysical but perceptible. All the spirit beings who populate the sun are supraphysical, yet they are perceptible to us on Earth. It is nonsense to think that sunlight is only what physicists imagine. The light of the sun is a manifestation of the sun beings. Sun beings are perceptible, but appear to us in a form we cannot interpret. The light of the stars, the moon, the sun, and other forms of light are also perceptible, but people do not have the right understanding of the beings behind it. Here we have a world that is perceptible but supraphysical and borders the world that is physically perceptible. It is very important to understand the characteristics of these different worlds. Number one, our earthly world, perceptible and physical. Number two, the second world, bordering the first. Angels, archangels, and archai live in this realm. It is imperceptible and supraphysical. It is the dwelling of the third hierarchy, but also that of human beings between death and a new birth, while associated with the third hierarchy. Number three, the third world is perceptible and supraphysical. It is the dwelling of the second hierarchy. And finally, number four, an imperceptible physical world. With the fourth, we have a complete list of all possible worlds. Number one, perceptible and physical. Two, imperceptible and supraphysical. Three, perceptible and supraphysical. Four, imperceptible and physical. This fourth world is imperceptible and yet physical. How can we visualize it? It is in our midst and present physically, and yet it is imperceptible. Consider, for example, the fact that your leg is heavy when you lift it off the ground. The force of gravity affects it. The force of gravity acts physically, but it is imperceptible to ordinary sensory perception. You experience this force of gravity inwardly, but in itself it is imperceptible to our physical senses. The same is true of certain other phenomena. You experience them within, but with feelings you cannot explain. An earlier, more instinctive spiritual science knew this as the, quote, mercurial, close quote, tendency, which strives toward the form of a drop. You always contain it within as the protein your bodies use. Again, this is something physical, but in its own configuration. You see, there is a living process of combustion within you. It acts physically and lives in your will, though you are unaware of it. It is imperceptible and physical. The first hierarchy beings, seraphim, cherubim, and thrones, are within this world, the realm of the imperceptible and physical. And now we come to something strange. When we pass through the gate of death, first we enter the imperceptible and supraphysical. We disappear from this world. At the second stage, we enter the sphere of the second hierarchy, the perceptible and supraphysical. During this phase of existence, we comprehend our destinies in the flowing, flooding light element of the sun and stars. One who has learned to gaze into the essence of this light does not merely look thoughtlessly into the expanses of the universe, the spheres of the sun and stars. One knows that within this flooding, flowing light, threads of human destiny are woven. This is the realm of the perceptible and supraphysical, in which those who have died, the so-called dead, live. Human beings again achieve the metamorphosis that prepares them to return to the earth, where they appear. But the world they wander between death and a new birth, the realm of the imperceptible and physical, is involved in the gravitational process, the phosphoric and mercurial processes of formation, and we will gradually come to understand how these develop. First, we are withdrawn from life into the invisible. Then we return imperceptibly to be withdrawn again, so we may prepare for a future perceptible and physical life on earth. The path between death and new birth leads from the perceptible and physical life on earth through the other conditions to the imperceptible physical earth life during the midnight hour of our existence. After that, we make our way back and re-enter physical existence on earth. This has been merely a preliminary outline, which we intend to elaborate in detail in the lectures to come. As you see, we cannot be content with generalities and abstractions about life between death and a new birth. We can point out, for example, how we come invisibly to earth between death and a new birth to prepare for our future life in the visible world. Just think how our understanding of life on earth is deepened when we know how spirit lives and is present within physical earthly existence at the cosmic midnight. Besides the physically embodied human beings among us here in earthly existence, there are spiritual essences continually wandering among us with vitality, who are at the midnight hour of their existence between death and rebirth. We are unaware of them, because their present earthly existence is at the midnight hour rather than at noon. We will look into the meaning of all this in the next lecture, the end of Lecture 2.